Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminists, and welcome to this latest Culture Club special episode. Sky's new six-part comedy drama, Funny Woman, written by Morwenna Banks, based on the novel by Nick Hornby, is the story of Barbara Parker, played by Gemma Arterton, who goes searching for her identity in London in the mid-1960s. Winning Miss Blackpool means nothing to Barbara, who has always been more excited about comedy than glamour, but getting past the establishment gatekeepers is harder than she imagined. We are thrilled to have on the Guilty Feminist the star of Funny Woman, it's Gemma Arterton.
Woo! Hello. Yay.
Hello.
Oh, thanks, guys. It's good to be back.
Oh, it's an absolute delight to have you, especially with this very guilty feminist show, because it's got a lot of my lovely and more guilty stuff, which is, oh my God, the costumes. And there are some very handsome men in this. And then on the other side, it's about a woman who's breaking through in the 60s in a quite madman way in this really seminal time and breaking boundaries in, and then something that I love so much, which is comedy. So did
you? We basically made it for you, Deborah.
That was my first question.
What would Deborah want in a show? Let's do this. Yeah.
That was very much my first question. Did you design this show? Am I the viewer? Everyone else just has to watch it.
Yeah, you are the target audience. You are it.
Excellent. Well, it's really worked on me because I was sent the whole series as a sneak peek because I am so lucky. I do feel very lucky when I get those kinds of things. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And because I'm doing a couple of writer's rooms at the moment, I'm very busy. I was like, I might not have time to watch it all. So I'll just watch the first two episodes and then I'll cut to the end. So I've got the... Well, I am afraid, listener, I was unable to do that. I binged the whole thing. It was as if someone had given me a tug of Haagen-Dazs ice cream and said, well, you can just have the top bit if you want. And then they left and they shut the door and they just left me in there with a spoon. Obviously, I had it all. It was gorgeous.
Oh,
really,
good. Really gorgeous. I'm glad you gorged on it.
I did. I really, really did. And there was no element of it that was doing my homework. Sometimes there are shows where you're like, I should watch this because it's, you know, it's important.
Yeah.
And this was absolutely delicious. Because I noticed it was your production company, Rebel Park.
Yes.
So did you find the source material in this Nick Hornby novel and say, hey, I want to do this and I want to produce and I want to be the this lead character of Sophie Straw / Barbara Parker?
I did. And unfortunately, I was pipped to the post by another production company called Potboiler. So they bought the rights. I'd tried to get them and they'd got them. And I thought, oh, well, good good riddance to you then. Good luck. Good luck with that. And then
you had a very generous response of going, I'm sure you'll do a wonderful job with that. As long as someone's making it, that's the main thing you thought.
That's what I thought. But then a few years later, or a couple of years later, I got sent a pilot episode. And they said, look, we've done this with this amazing writer called Moana Banks. And we want you to play Barbara, and also will you co-produce it with us? And I was like, yes, yes, and yes. And you also did the hardest bit, which is find the writer. And they nailed it, actually, with finding Moana, who is
incredible. That's the kind of dream, really, isn't it? Because you got to be able to produce it, but they had done some of that harder development stuff. And I love Moana Banks.
Yes,
she's a fantastic writer. But
yeah, she
also plays a brilliant character in this. It's sort of the producer's wife / assistant. It's quite 60s. As much as she's the, but she of course is also the driving force in that office. In the way that women had to be very clever and careful about how they led.
Yes,
they had to often lead as if they weren't leading. And she's a brilliant character. I loved seeing her on screen in it. So what drew you to the source material? Like when you first read the novel and before you were making voodoo dolls of the people who had annoyingly got in there and got the rights, but fortunately later wanted to collaborate with you. What was it about the book where you went, I want to do this?
First and foremost, it was the character of Barbara Parker, because there was something about her and her, where she comes from, who she is, how she is, that spoke to me. So that was the main thing. But also about how comedy is written and how it's made. And the book goes into that in quite great detail. Obviously, our show does as well, but it's a little bit more kind of Barbara's life. But I've always been really interested in how stuff's made and how stuff comes about, especially comedy. And, often it's ridiculous, madhap stuff where people are just kind of throwing themselves around being doofuses, and then this amazing kind of piece of comedy comes out, and how it's actually quite technical, and how things are honed and all of that. And so it spoke to me in a way.
So both the creative side and the gender side of
this
young woman breaking through, and also just being, I thought what was interesting about it was that she was quite clear about the direction she wanted her career to take. And at that point, women were often relegated to giving the straight line in a low cut top. She says, well, I don't want to do that. I want to be the funny one. And there's this great scene where your character, Barbara Parker, who by now her stage name is Sophie Straw, is auditioning. She's talked her way into an audition past a gatekeeper by fibbing, I certainly have done that kind of thing at times. You just think, well, if I really want this, I'm going to have to go for it. And it is a better climate now for women, for sure. But when I started out in comedy, I mean, it might as well have been the 60s, to be honest. It was very recognisable territory for me. And she breaks through, she gets in, she comes to audition, but she doesn't have the sides. She doesn't really know what the material is because she hasn't been prepared, because she's talked her way into something she knows is happening. And so she just has to improvise. And I thought the way that you did all of those funny voices and bits of physical comedy, and you were so allowed yourself to be goofy, and your character's very pretty, but she allowed herself to not be pretty in that moment, to not be demure, and to be all of the things. And it really turns the heads of the people auditioning her, the men auditioning her, let's be honest. But it also, watching as an audience, you go, oh, okay, I see why it's not enough for her to be glamorous. She starts out as Miss Blackpool and she's just not enough. It's just like, this isn't what I want to get out of bed for. And I really loved that scene. Was that fun for you, doing something that was so physically comedic and, casting off ideas of femininity and beauty and glamour?
Yeah. I mean, it's like what I've always wanted to do, But it was so fun doing it that day. That day was day one or first day of the shoot, and sort of had a bit of rehearsal time with the actors, but they didn't know what I was going to do in the audition, and neither did I, to be honest. And you know what it's like. You do the first one, it's a bit tame, and then you do another take, and then you go for it a bit more, and then by the fifth take, you're like, you know, you're completely all over the place. And it was so fun. And I remember that day, it was the first day I'd, you know, been on set wearing the wig and the hair and the makeup and the eyelashes and the, you know, the tight dress and the cinched in waist. And it just felt like such a juxtaposition to be able to be completely goofy and stupid and silly and yet be in this sort of ridiculous, like very glamorous look. And it was really fun to do both of those things at the same time.
And so some of that was improvised that you did at the audition.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember seeing Leo Bill and Matthew Beard, who play the two writers of the comedy show, the two comedy writers in it. I remember doing it and they were like, what the fuck is she doing? Like, but in a kind of also like a, this is as actors, they were going, oh, this is what this show is. Oh, okay, right. We're gonna be silly and we're gonna go there. And it was really fun.
Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of me teaching you improvisation at RADA.
I'm sure, Deborah, it actually helped, because there was a lot of one of the reasons why my favorite scenes in the show are all the rehearsal scenes, and they're coming up with ideas and they're just riffing and they're trying to hone these things. And a lot of it is like our improvised classes at RADA, when you'd be like, I suck and I love to fail, and you know, yeah. Yes, and you got to kind of go with it and make a fool of yourself and then move on from that. And then, or maybe that will inform the right thing. And that was what it was like when we were shooting. There were a lot of times in rehearsals where I'd do things that were so terrible. I mean, God, awful. But we'd move on from it. And, you know, and I think it's so invaluable what you taught us at RADA. Really, really, really helped me on this.
That's actually lovely to hear. And I had sort of forgotten that I took, because we have a relationship now beyond that. I should probably explain to listeners, years before The Guilty Feminist, I taught improvisation at RADA, which, if you're listening internationally, is the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And I had a mantra that I had, in fact, I think, learned from my improv teacher, Patty Styles, that I suck and I love to fail, but you have to say it in a really happy way so that you just release all that energy. And I'd sort of forgotten that's how we'd met until I watched this, because yeah, we've done other things together and socialized together and done podcasts together. And I suddenly went, oh my God, this has just had a flash of you at drama school and me teaching. I'd sort of forgotten I taught at RADA almost. It was so long ago. And I went, oh my God, this is We Suck and We Love to Fail.
Basically, the whole thing is We Suck and it could have another title, which is I Suck and I Love to Fail. But it was definitely my mantra when I was making this, because there were so many things that I had to do that, you know, especially with the physical comedy stuff where, you know, you have to go there, you have to try. Sometimes it will work, sometimes it won't. And the only way of finding it is by making loads of mistakes and sucking and failing.
Do you know why I think all women should have to learn to improvise almost, and people of minority genders, is that we are constantly messaged with, you've got to get it right, it's got to be perfect. If you're in any way, and of course there are other intersections there in play in terms of race and disability and gender expression and displacement and so on. If you're somebody who's being told you better be good, because otherwise, yeah, if you show any mediocrity, it reflects on your whole gender or your whole race. It's so empowering to go, no, you can come in with the mantra, I suck and I love to fail, because actually it's staying good natured when things go wrong. That's the very essence of liberation that makes people go, oh, as long as you don't beat yourself up, you don't look like that was a failure. You look like this is a playful process.
Yeah, and you just move on, and it informs the thing that eventually will be the right thing. It's just as valid as finding the best thing. It's just as important. But we do, you're right. I mean, as women, we got to go in there and nail it, you know. But that's not often the way to finding things, definitely. So it's such a valuable tool. So thank you.
I really was impressed by it. I just thought you were so credible as this iconic comedy legend, which is is what you're playing. We're meant to be seeing the young years where this iconic comedy legend, clearly when she's older, that's what she's going to be, is formed. And I was like, no, this is really plausible. This is really believable. And we're seeing that vulnerability behind, but she just gets out there and that's, you know, she's obviously scared and she's obviously got, you know, deep psychic wounds from the past, but she just comes out and sells it and is running rings around the boys. And there's something wonderful about that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
There were something else I wanted to ask you about, because I haven't read the book, and this show did examine the intersections of race with the character of Dennis Mahindra. And I looked it up, and Dennis in the book is not a British South Asian man. He's I think a Caucasian British man. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Is that something that you introduced because you felt it would be a dated piece without an examination of what was happening in the 60s with race?
Yes. Yeah. And also just a really, again, really interesting territory to explore. He has a lot of things that he's fighting against as a British South Asian man at that time working in the arts. And he has to kind of fight against that. He plays a director and producer of the sitcom that we make, and he has to go up against that's something that he faces resistance from the TVC, which is like, you know, the TV studio that is producing the show. And but also
which is
we
sort
want,
of is that meant to be the BBC, but you're not saying it's the BBC because you're on Sky. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I kept wondering. I kept going, have they said this is the BBC? It's just a sort of nebulous, they keep talking about the other side, which in those days ITV didn't.
ITV, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit nebulous. If you're listening, BBC, it's not about you.
No, obviously.
You're so vain. I bet you think this establishment British network in the 1960s is about you.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's like TVC Centre, which is a 1960s building in West London, which we allude to, you know, it's obviously mm-hmm. meant to be the BBC. But no, I think it was important to us, not only because, you know, in this day and age, we should always have as many people from different backgrounds in all work that we do, but also just in terms of his connection with Sophie, Barbara Sophie, in that they are both outsiders. They're both fighting against something that's a sort of a thing that they can connect on, whether it's a known connection or not. It's a subconscious thing, but they both have that.
He's played by Arsha Ali, who is
he's brilliant,
really terrific, compelling actor,
brilliant,
and a very handsome leading man. If you don't mind me saying, I'm a feminist, but
it's so true.
I also love the storyline of Diane, who was.
Yeah.
I looked this up, and this is a true story. It's obviously fictionalized, but she plays a young black journalist who becomes a TV presenter. in the 60s. And when Enoch Powell comes on that network, he actually says, I don't want her in the studio. And I was like, this seems very early. This seems like maybe a later story imposed. It's not. It happened in the 60s.
Yeah, it did. And there, it's based on a real person, and a lot of what is in the show is sort of loosely based on what happened to her at the BBC at the time. And yeah, you're right. I mean, in the 60s, she was the first Black journalist to be on air, and the amount of, I mean, the amount of abuse that she would get from
shocking
viewers writing in and saying, you know, get her off our telly and all of that stuff. And then the Enoch Powell interview, which is just awful, which everyone, if you want to watch it, it's him sort of talking about race and immigration.
That's real, isn't it? That's real.
That's the real interview.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And you've superimposed her in.
A bit like Mad Men. I mean, it's lighter than Mad Men. It's funnier than Mad Men. It's more playful and joyful than Mad Men. But with those elements of, you know, race relations in the 60s, it's very well done, I thought.
Yeah, and it was important to us that, because as much as the 60s was a great time of change and amazing things were happening for so many people, like the sexual revolution and all these cultural things that were happening, and it was also a really awful time as well for so many things that were going on, especially race relations. And, you know, so it was really important in the show that we touch on it. I mean, it's also about making a sitcom, but that's what also was going on in comedy at that time, is that, you know, these voices from especially working class voices were starting to come through, like Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, Till Death Do Us Part, that show. It just, you know, it was changing the landscape of comedy, and it was important for us to show a little bit of the kind of what was going on socially at the time in the show.
How race relations and gender politics and also gay rights all intersected in comedy, how people were trying to just imply things, because of course you couldn't have a gay character, but what we're able to see in this show is that you can imply and you can wink at the camera, and those who need to see that or feel that, see it and feel it, and those who would otherwise complain, the Mary Whitehouse effect.
The Mary Whitehouse effect, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, Mary Whitehouse being, if you're a young listener or you're from abroad and you don't know about Mary Whitehouse, she was an advocate for morality on the television and in theatre and film. And but her catchphrase was basically ban this filth. And so you're working, this sort of great social change will always have pushback. And it's wonderful to see how you've woven all of these threads together, and you've still got this gorgeous, lovely story about a young woman finding herself and finding love, and the beauty of the 60s and the costumes and the nightclub scene. That's that sequined outfit you wear in that nightclub.
I know, wasn't that fun? There was a lot of sequins that day.
Yeah, it was, I'm a feminist, but I want to be.
I just love a sequin.
In the 60s, in go-go boots, in a sequined sylphie number, dropping acid, just for one night. Just drop
just
me back.
Just for the night.
That's for one night. And which is, of course, what you get to do as an actor. I mean, I know it's not really like that, because you've got to stand around and wait for ages, and then people keep shouting cut and make you do it from a different angle. So it's not really just like letting your hair down, but there is the fantasy of it. Is there any hope of a second series, or is that story done now?
No, there's major hopes for a second season. And we're actually in the process of writing bits of it at the moment and kind of working out what happens. And so hopefully if enough people enjoy this first one and see it, then we will go for a second. But that is the plan, yes.
Well, I really recommend, I think if you enjoy The Guilty Feminist, you're really going to love it. There's so much guilt, there's so much feminism. Do you have any guilty feminist moments, any I'm a feminist buts from making this series? Anything that you can remember about fun times?
Yeah, mainly to do with how extra the hair was on some, especially some of my, and how obsessed I became with, like, making my hair look amazing. And hours spent in the makeup chair, just like playing around and doing ridiculous hair and makeup. And
well, I'm a famous spot. I did. I really appreciated a story where we saw somebody come onto her period due to anxiety in white trousers. And I also did spend quite a lot of time ogling the beautiful 60s updos. Tune in. You will not be sorry. You will also see Rupert Everett, as you've never seen him before, playing an aging agent. Very, very, very funny performance. There are some really gorgeous performances in this. It'll be the right mix for you if you love The Guilty Feminist of joyful, naughty, sexy, fun, beautiful aesthetic loveliness, and also some real feminist themes coming through. It stars the wonderful Gemma Arterton. It has been written by the incredible Morwenna Banks. Gemma, we've got to finish now. Love you lots.
Oh, thank you.
Really love what you're doing.
Barbara is ever so slightly provincial.
How about Sophie Straw?
I was born in Blackpool, and I came to London to be someone.
Anyone in particular?
My dad says that actresses are no better than common prostitutes.
Is your dad a vicar from Victorian times?
Hello? You lot don't look like how I imagined. I thought you'd all be tweedy posh lads with pipes.
Boys hope to find someone like you.
Comedy-wise. Obviously.
This isn't going to last forever. Make the most of what you've got while you've got it. God knows there'll soon be another young girl coming up behind you, prettier and bigger.
I've never met anyone like you.
Are you telling me you actually want to act?
Well, we'll send you out on some auditions with words.
No bikinis.
Yet.
Ever.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.